Hello! Welcome to It's Okay to Feel with Jennifer Unknown, a NAMI OC podcast, where we explore mental health topics that help you feel your feelings and feel a little less alone. We're so happy you're here. Now, on to the show.
All right, welcome to It's Okay to Feel, because it's okay to feel. I like to feel all day long. Feely feels. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Known, and today's episode is all about feelings and why it's okay to feel. The name of this podcast is called It's Okay to Feel, and today we're talking about why it's okay to feel. And our interview today is with Danae Selkin, who's a therapist and a friend, and just so good at talking about feelings. Really loved that conversation. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about what feelings mean to us. Are you excited?
I am. What do feelings mean to you?
Gosh. Well, when I think about feelings, I think about, and I mentioned, we talked about this a little bit in our conversation with Danae, but I think about a map. I think about like a journey, you know, like a road, and feelings are the guideposts on that road, right? We're walking along, or we're driving, or we're on our little bicycle or whatever, scooter, and we see a sign, and maybe that sign says something like, I'm feeling anxious or whatever. And then maybe the next sign says, you know, maybe the next sign says like, you know, ask a question like, why are you feeling that way? You know, or is that true that you're feeling that way? And so the point being, when I think about feelings, I think about being mindful. I think about like being curious about what you're feeling, you know, in your body, in your mind, in your noggin, as I like to say.
I like your noggin. No one.
I do too. But it's about being in touch with ourselves and not being afraid to be in touch with ourselves. Feelings, I think, especially like in our culture, get a rap for like being, I don't know, wussy or something, you know, like,
or too sensitive, or yeah, like
all that
weak.
And the truth is the opposite. Feeling your feelings is a superpower. It's strength. It's resilience. So that's what I think about. How about you? What do you think about when you think about feelings? Feeling your feelings.
Let's see. What do I think about feelings? I feel like when people allow themselves to feel their feelings, that's like, feelings are what make you like alive. Like, they don't always feel good and you don't always want to think about them, but because you're able to feel, like, that's what makes you like a human. You're able to feel and then figure out how to go up or down or sideways from them. And in theory, they're kind of a blessing, even though they're also kind of crappy sometimes. But without the negative feelings, you can't feel the positive feelings. And sometimes the negative feelings make you even more grateful for the positive feelings. So yeah.
Yeah, I like the way you describe it. It's integral to being human, right? Because like without them,
we're squirrels.
We're squirrels, or we're not here anymore.
Feelings.
You know?
Without them, we're squirrels. That's our new sticker.
That should be our new sticker. Oh my gosh. That's amazing. But also squirrels are adorable. And maybe people would think we were like denigrating squirrels.
Oh no, I love squirrels.
Is that the right word?
I don't know. You have like a much bigger vocabulary than me.
We're dismissing squirrels. But yeah, I love that. And you know, I do think it's important also, like you mentioned negative feelings. I think when I think about feelings, I don't think about it in the context of positive or negative. I think about just, they're all here to tell me something, right? And we can't figure out if they're going to tell me something or not, or if I need to ignore it or not, if I'm not paying attention, right?
Do you, changing the topic just a little bit, do you think you're an optimist or a pessimist or somewhere in between? Maybe it's called an ambivist. I don't really know.
That's interesting. I don't really think about that. I am somewhat of a realist, but I also have a lot of like utopian sort of leanings as well, you know, meaning like I'm a wishful thinker, you know, I let my imagination kind of run amok a bit, you know. How about you?
I call myself an optimistic pessimist because technically I am a pessimist. Like I always think of like the worst case scenario. I'm kind of panicky. I'm fearful of like there not being birds in my new house, like, or maybe not enough lizards. Like, you can notice giving me the funniest look.
How does that make you feel?
The look you're giving me or the feeling of not enough lizards?
The lizardless world. How does that make you feel?
I lived in New York for a long time and I never realized how much I missed salamanders and like newts until I moved. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. I love land creatures. Okay.
Sure. No, I'm with you.
I love walking through like the backyard and there's like lizards and snails and birds and squirrels and bunnies. It makes me happy. It's, but I didn't realize how much I missed them until I didn't live here. Like I love walking down the sidewalk and they all scurry everywhere. Okay. We're getting off topic.
Are you a person who, feels a lot of feelings when, you're met with change?
Oh yeah. Like hardcore. Like I know we kind of just talked about that now, but I'm negative. Like okay, here's a great example. We bought a couch in New York and we had a tiny apartment, even tinier than Noan's tiny house. And my husband said, I think we should move the couch, like a different direction. Like, so we're looking at, instead of looking at the window, we can look at the TV. and I'm like, I don't know. And I had like a small anxiety attack and I was like, I don't know if we should do this. And my husband's like, okay, let's just move the couch. And if you hate it, we can move the couch back. And I love the couch there. Like it was great to look at the TV from the couch, but like even those kind of changes, like boggle me. Like I know it's not like a healthy boggling, but like like when I was pregnant, instead of being excited, being pregnant, which kind of, I look back on that and that makes me really sad. Like I was not excited to have Oliver and I love him now, but I was so fearful of the changes that will happen in our lives, which is inevitable. Like you have to know once you have a baby, like everything in your life will change. Some good, some bad, mostly exhausting. But I was so fearful of him walking. What's going to happen when he walks? Or how am I going to homeschool him when he's 7? Or what if he is this personality trait? How will I handle that? Like, how will I handle him doing math this weird way? And my friend's like, dude, you're pregnant. Like, why don't you worry about like birthing him first? Like walking's not going to come for like a really long time. And then I have that habit of like being fearful of that next step. And instead of being in the present step, which you mentioned as like a great managing anxiety technique. Like I probably need to check myself before I wreck myself more often.
Well, yeah. I mean, I feelings can get away from us, right? And feelings can take us to that, you know, anxiety place and thinking of ahead and stuff like that. And I think, you know, when we're whether we're talking about anxiety or really any sort of like stressful situation, mindfulness can be like a great tool to bring us back to center. Because really, when we're talking about change and things like that in the future, you know, these things are really out of our control. And I think for me, you know, what has helped me in my mental health is reminding myself of that, you know, reminding myself of not saying like, you have no control, Noan, but also saying that like, there are a few things that you can control and let's focus on those things. And not try to like control the things that are really out of my control, because that just leads to anxiety, that leads to stress, that leads to heartache, all of that stuff.
So to me, when I hear the word mindfulness, I kind of feel like it's like a buzzy word right now. So do you want to, in case a listener and me don't know exactly what that means, can you kind of describe it?
I think it's probably different for everyone, but for me, it's specifically about, you know, sort of engaging my mind and body to be in the moment and to be present, whether that's through like deep breathing techniques or, you know, just kind of self-talk and saying like, I'm here now, and really paying attention to the here and now, as opposed to like, what's going to happen tomorrow? Like, so for the folks listening, like maybe you're in college or high school or something, and you're thinking about, you're worried about what's going to happen tomorrow on the test or what's going to happen at school. I get that. I've been there. But, you know, no amount of anxiety is going to make tomorrow better, or, you know, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So what you can control is what you have now. And so really, like, I, you know, it's interesting because I came from a world, like I was raised in a like a Judeo-Christian home, like very strict at times, but also like super wild at times, you know, like my parents not being there a lot and me being gone all the time and my mom buying me beer in high school and stuff like that. Like, you know, so like very like confusing in that way. But I bring that up because there was a lot of it that felt like very repressed and structured. Right. And I felt a lot of anxiety about like what I can and can't control, because there's a lot of like doom and gloom in, you know, some of that experience. And so now, being someone who's, I think, more connected to nature and more connected to like myself and knowing myself, like I can be okay with allowing myself to let go of that. And a lot of it is letting go. Like, I would say to the listeners, to you, Jennifer, when it comes to our mental health practices, like letting go is an important rule across the board. Letting go of the stress, letting go of the anxieties about tomorrow, letting go of that kind of control, you know, letting go is crucial, you know, and has certainly helped my relationship with my feelings and my mental health. How about you?
How about me? Like, how do I
let it go?
Can't hold it back anymore. I feel like I'm going to talk about food in like every part of everything. I only have two. I have like a technique that maybe isn't, it's about eating. So it might not be the healthiest technique, but there's, for some reason, one of the only ways I can like recalibrate my brain is like, I get away from what I'm doing and I make myself a cup of tea and I have like a treat and I like fully enjoy whatever I'm eating. Like, it's something just for me. It's a moment. Like, I'll turn the TV on for Oliver, like, and I'll just enjoy this thing. And then I'm able to kind of like move forward. Mm. It's been that way for like 5 years. Like, Camila used to make fun of me because in New York City, like, most people eat as they're walking, and I refuse to eat while walking because this is a treat. Like, I want to enjoy this crappy $1 slice of pizza, this red bean bun from Chinatown, this whatever. Like, I want to sit down and I want to have a cup of tea with it. And that's like my moment.
Yeah.
Like, and that I love these moments. Like, they happen every day. Sometimes I love them 5 times a day, but, that's like, for whatever reason, in that moment I could focus, maybe because it feels like a present, like, mm-hmm. Even if it's just like whatever.
Yeah.
A cheese cracker or a cookie. Or yeah. Maybe, you know, some marmalade.
Yeah.
Yes, if you catch get these nest eggs in all of our episodes, give me a shout. But that one is like, that's my thing.
I love that. It's like a little ritual that, you feel safe, and it is a self-honoring, self-care sort of thing. Yeah, I like that a lot. I relate to that, especially when it comes to like food. Like I don't want to eat on the run, you know, like I want to like take my time and really enjoy the thing and make it special. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Do you, you know, when it comes to like, what is your sense of, because we're talking about feelings, what is your sense of like how feeling sort of crosses over and interacts with, you know, the gender spectrum, you know, because, you know, I identify as a man. I am a male person, human being, and you know, feelings like for me, you know, may be a little different. Like, what do you think about that?
That's a great question, and I can't wait to hear your answer to that. I feel like in my upbringing, okay, and I am like completely basing this on my upbringing on society in like the 90s and the 80s, like
when Vanilla Ice was prominent,
and he had that, I don't even know if he had that elbow tattoo back then, but like,
and he said, go ninja, go ninja, go.
Exactly. Was that actually in the episode before, or was that just something that we talked about?
I don't know, but no one's going to understand what we're talking about. Just no. Go on.
Unless they listen to all the episodes and there's like so much crossover. We're like a really good novel.
That's right.
Like an author that has like little tidbits in every book. But I feel like generally it's okay for like girls, women, whatever, to have feelings more than it is for guys. I can't imagine being the person I am and being a male. I mean, I might not be exactly the same, but I might still have the same like structure and brain waves and whatever. I can't imagine how difficult that is. But in my house specifically, it was frowned upon. Like, it meant weakness. It meant I couldn't get over stuff. I was like sensitive. Like, you're so sensitive to the point where like I was 23 and my mom, I think I was 23, and my mom didn't tell me she had cancer because she didn't think I could handle it. What ended up happening is that my best friend lived where I lived, and we drove, she happened to be going down to where we lived, and I drove down with her to surprise my parents. And my mom was recovering from surgery, and she was very drugged, and she kept thanking me for loving her so much that I came down after her surgery, but they didn't tell me she was sick. So because I can't handle it. So like, wow. I dread whenever my mom says there's something I have to talk to you about, which happens all the time about a myriad of things. I don't know if I said that the right way or if that's the right word, but, because in my brain, my, like the way I was raised is like, you can't handle that. You're weak. You're sensitive. Like you're, you know, so it's kind of crippling, but and then I should ask my brother, but I'm not incredibly close with him, but maybe I should ask him, did he feel that way too? Like, because he's boy and I am girl and you are Tarzan and I am Jennifer.
Yeah.
So what about you?
No, I wanted to reflect on what you said real quick and 'cause it's interesting. I do think there are, you know, gender constructs that say we have to be a certain way, but obviously like, you know, there is this universal thing sometimes for however you identify, you know, sometimes people can impress upon you that feelings are, yeah, like you're too much, right? And, mm-hmm. and you can't handle it. And I think that's doing a disservice to like, just the human spirit, you know, because these feelings are meant to be felt, as Danae said, right, in our interview. Like they're meant to be felt. They're information, and the more we have it, the better. And so it always hurts me when I hear someone like yourself say that was taken away from me in some way, you know.
And that's why I feel like, especially raising a boy, like why I feel it is so imperative that I raise him, and if he wants to be, maybe he won't be, I feel like he's going to be sensitive, but to allow him to feel whatever he's feeling and to try and put a name to it. Cause Danae had a great little thing about that. Cause I never say like, what are you feeling in your body? Like what emotion is that? But maybe I should. to allow him to express himself. Like, he is a toddler. He is feeling a lot of feelings, like, and let's talk through it. And you can come to me and you can get a hug. Like, hugs are good. Like, so hopefully he carry that out throughout his life. Like, if he is, you know, anyway, he is, like, even those people who don't consider themselves incredibly sensitive, maybe they would if they were treated a different way when they were younger.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I he's going to be as sensitive and feely as he needs to be, as he wants to be, because you guys have that safe, you know, environment, you know, fostering that. Yeah, for me, you know, it's interesting because I do think, like, I do get the question a lot about, like, oh, what does it mean to you to be a man and to, like, be so feely and talk about your feelings and stuff? And, you know, I get that. It's coming from this place of stigma around, like, men and how men have to be beacons of strength and we have to, like, be strong and all that stuff. And the reality is all that stuff is bull honky, you know, like, we need to be what we need to be, you know, and for me, I was always very sensitive and feely and, you know, growing up in an environment that felt very, you know, that felt very dangerous to do. Like, I had to hide myself. So, I didn't really learn to tap into that until really my late 20s, honestly. And I feel sad about that. I feel, like, grief around that and loss, but again, all I have is now and what I can do with it now. And it feels great to feel. I love to feel. It's a wonderland, you know. I love it. And, you know, for anyone listening, whether you identify as a man or, you know, in, you know, non-binary or, you know, queer or any sort of groups that feel like you have to be a certain way or you're not accepted or something, like, you are a beautiful feely human that has this wonderful tapestry of and superpower of feelings, and feelings are important, you know, so use them, you know, be curious about them, because it's only going to allow you to grow and really tap into who you are and enrich your connections with other people, you know, and that's what this is all about.
And that's what makes us not squirrels.
That's what makes us not squirrels. Yeah. And we have the opposable thumbs to put marmalade on crackers. Yeah.
My cat actually does a good job of doing that. She doesn't have those.
Oh, well, that's impressive. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to cut it. Listeners, thank you for listening to It's Okay to Feel. I hope you enjoy the episode. I keep calling it episodes. Sorry. The
Aren't
interview.
They episodes? Oh, interview. Yeah. Yes, we do hope you enjoy the interview and the whole episode.
The whole episode and the interview with Danae Selkin coming up. I wanted to say that It's Okay to Feel is for informational, educational, and or entertainment purposes only. It is not a substitute for medical or psychiatric advice, diagnosis, or treatment. We are silly, feely, non-therapist people who like crackers and who are not squirrels, but maybe squirrels. So that's
in
what that
life.
Means. In another life.
And I wanted to mention that we... It's Okay to Feel is funded by the Orange County Healthcare Agency, OCHCA, Behavioral Health Services, Coronavirus Aid and Relief, and Economic Security CARES Act, which basically means that we were gifted these funds to start this podcast, and we are grateful.
We are indeed. And I'm going to say this.
You don't have to do that. Hey, that's why I was waiting for your hey.
Oh my goodness. Hey, remember that your feelings are valid. Your feelings are guideposts on your journey. And it's always okay to feel. Welcome to It's Okay to Feel, a podcast by NAMI OC and hosted by me, Noan Wells, and my co-host Jennifer Lynn. Hello, Jennifer.
That's me. Hello.
That's you. Hello. And today, in today's episode, we're talking about why it's okay to feel. And we have a special guest who is a therapist. She is a friend. She's been a guest on my podcast, Yumi Empathy, and she's a feeler herself. Danae Selkin. Hello, Danae.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me, guys. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Thank you for being on our show.
Yeah. Well, we're very excited to be here with Danae talking about why it's okay to feel, because feelings are the best. Feelings are my jam. They're Jennifer's jam. They're Danae's jam. They're marmalade jam.
No, I think they're cherry jam today. A little sweet, a little sour.
Ooh, there you go. I love a cherry jam.
On a grilled cheese cracker. Sorry.
Ooh.
I love to eat.
Danae, for the listeners, would you do us a favor and just introduce yourself and tell the listeners a little bit about the work you do?
Sure. So I'm Danae, and I am a therapist in Los Angeles, and I work in a private practice with a group of therapists where we do really holistic psychotherapy, just sort of looking at the whole human. And, you know, what that includes is certainly talk therapy. I come from a more depth psychological perspective, but we also at Flow House do like some acupuncture and somatic work and EMDR and, you know, like just different modalities to really address like whatever's coming up, whether that's trauma work or sort of reparenting and all of the things that we do in therapy. And it's great. You know, I love working with clients. It's been certainly an evolution this year. I've been working virtually for the first time since March, as so many therapists have. But, you know, it's been really incredible to feel like this is something that I can continue to do to be of service at a time when so many of us are just feeling, oof, just so, you know, helpless with the state of the world and how challenging so many things are right now. But yeah, that's a little bit of what I do. I'm also a yoga teacher. I've done that for like 10 years here in LA, and mindfulness coach. And, you know, I teach some online, or facilitate, I guess I should say, some online therapy groups, and just a little bit of everything.
Lovely. And you're a podcast host.
And thank you, Noan, that's right. And I have a podcast as well called Cheaper Than Therapy with a good girlfriend of mine, Vanessa Bennett, where we do a lot of, you know, just having conversations that hopefully destigmatize and desensitize the conversations that we have in the therapy room. So we sort of, the goal is to sort of like peek behind the door. We have people come on for live coaching therapy type sessions. It's technically not therapy because, you know, it's all anonymous, but yeah, so you can sort of get the feel in these sessions of like what it would be like if you were to step in the therapy room and maybe hear something someone's struggling with that you might resonate with in your own life. And then we also bring on guests, and Noan, you've been on our podcast, and we sort of, you know, just bring on people that we really love and respect in the mental health field as well.
Amazing. So the first question I have is, why is it okay to feel?
Oh, love that. Well, you know, I like to say often that, you know, what happens when we don't, I think is the better question, right? These feelings are going to be there in our body anyway. I think a lot of what we are conditioned to do from a very young age is push down the feelings that either society or our caregivers or our peer groups have taught us are the unacceptable feelings, right? Like, it is okay to be happy, sadness, not so much, right? Like, it is okay to be excited, nervous, shut that down, right? So some feelings we sort of collectively accept as being the feelings we want to feel, and some feelings we sort of make the unacceptable feelings. But all the feelings are present within us. And I, you know, I love to use the analogy of like a beach ball. So if you push down the feelings that we decide aren't the acceptable feelings to feel, it's sort of like if you've ever had like one of those really big beach balls in a pool, I like to talk to clients about, like, you can push that beach ball down underwater and it's going to be a lot of effort. It's going to be really difficult and you can do it for a while. You know, you can use your whole body to hold it down. It's going to be slippery, but you can maneuver it. You can make it happen. But eventually that ball is going to come to the surface. And when it does, it's going to be huge. It's going to be like an explosion. Whereas if we just sort of allowed ourselves to be in relationship to the ball, if we just sort of allowed ourselves to play with the ball, maybe see what it's all about, it would be a very different experience. And I think that's a lot like our feelings, right? Those feelings are present in our body, whether we give them space to be felt, to be explored, to be named or not. But I think when we suppress our feelings, they come up, they manifest in other ways. You know, I think so often our anxieties, our, you know, our deepest forms of depression, those are about the things that we are not giving ourselves the space to really explore and allow ourselves to feel a lot of times.
Why do you feel like it's difficult to feel our feelings? Or why do you, I feel like this is like the 100 What's the phrase? Like the 100% question? Or what? I can't think of the phrase, but why do you feel like society and why isn't it okay to feel in general?
Well, I think, you know, it's just, it's a lot of conditioning. I think that, you know, our parents feel like certain feelings are the unacceptable feelings because they were conditioned to believe by their parents that those were unacceptable feelings and their parents, right? And it becomes sort of the cycle until someone sort of breaks the cycle and says, why though is it not okay to feel these, you know? And I think it's so interesting, Jennifer, I know you and I were talking before we started, that we both have little boys. And I think when you have children, it's sort of fascinating to watch. Children are like, they're in their feelings. Like I say, they're like the gurus of feeling feelings because they're like in them and they're big and they're like expressing them. And, you know, I think our work as parents is to really not shut that down, right? Like we are mm-hmm. tempted, certainly, because someone taught us like, ooh, like if you're in a store, like you can't be acting out, you can't have big feelings, like you need to keep that suppressed. But who says, right? Like if mm-hmm. I'm frustrated, like can I name the feeling? Can I allow space for it? And I find so often, you know, as parents, what we're sort of witnessing in our children that is so difficult to tolerate when they have big feelings is the extent to which we've conditioned ourselves to suppress our own big feelings, right? So bearing witness to what we have sort of had to shut down or shame ourselves for, or make ourselves wrong for being in the space of, it can be really tough to sort of allow them to have that space. So I often will say to parents, you know, our work is actually to tend to ourselves, to really like notice what's coming up for me when my kiddo has a big feeling versus like making their feelings wrong. Because I think all feelings are meant to be felt. I think all feelings should be welcome. I think all feelings should be explored and named and processed. And I think what really sort of ends up causing us to have all of these deep, mental health struggles a lot of times is the fact that we're just not allowing ourselves to feel everything that we need to feel.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. I wonder, like you mentioned conditioning, Danae, what are some of those tools of conditioning that, that maybe listeners could keep an eye out for, right? Because like a lot of them, as you know, are things we're not even aware of, things that are kind of, you know, insidiously sort of hiding behind things and sort of part of things that we're just, they just kind of sneak up on us, you know?
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to think about it. You know, I really love Byron Katie's work. I think she is one of the first people, that sort of like introduced me to this idea of like how we workshop the thoughts that come up, you know, because we will so often just sort of accept things that, you know, the thought as like a fact, right? And I think not only are thoughts not facts, but feelings are not facts in that feelings will come, they will move through us and they will move on, right? But sometimes like when we're in the space of anxiety, I think what is difficult about anxiety, for instance, is that we imagine this feeling of anxiety that I have is going to last forever. But that's actually not the case, right? Like I like to say it's like coffee. If you drink a bunch of coffee, you would probably be a little like wired. You would be maybe a little agitated. You would feel like hype on coffee, but you wouldn't say like, I am coffee. You would say there's coffee in me, right? And I sort of like to experience whatever feeling I'm having in the same way, right? Like there's anxiety in me right now. Like I am in the experience of anxiety, but I am not anxiety. That is not who I am. That is a feeling I'm experiencing, but it's not the fact of who I am. So circling back to your question, I think, you know, the feelings that, you know, there are some feelings that are a little bit more uncomfortable to feel. Anxiety is going to be one of those feelings, right? And so I think a lot of times our parents, in their inability to sit in the discomfort of some of the challenging feelings, have for themselves and certainly condition us to shut those things down, right? Either to distract or to, you know, make them wrong or push them down, explain them away, however we've done that. But can I stay in the curiosity with the thought that's coming up around the anxiety? Can I stay in curiosity around the sensations in my body that come up? I think that is the work that it becomes really helpful for us to do.
I know it's not on the list and it's deterring just a tiny bit, but especially raising a kiddo, but what do you, like, how would you help people, not only their children, but help other people allow people to feel their feelings? Like, is there phrases you can say? Like, is there a certain way we should comfort people or give them space when they are feeling feelings?
Yeah. I mean, I love that you asked about kiddos because I feel like for me, so much of the work of parenting for me right now has been like, how do I experience my child as a human being? And I know that sounds like ridiculous when you say it on face value, but that like they are just little humans. Maybe they are a little bit more in touch with the things that we're trying to remember how to get back in touch with. But ultimately, I think there's so much about like respecting their space and what they are working through that is the same as other adults, right? So I think so often it's about naming the feeling. I think bearing witness is so much of what ends up being really powerful about therapy and, you know, gives us the space to process whatever we're going through, because our work is not really so much to fix any experience of feelings that anyone else is having, but just to sort of give them the space to feel it, right? So if my little boy is like really frustrated and, you know, like his feelings are big and he like wants to hit, like I will sort of like drop into myself first. Like I'm always, you know, whatever the feeling is, I sort of tend to myself first and notice what's coming up for me. I want to like shut down his experience of, you know, rage or anger or whatever he's feeling. So can I take a deep breath and just like notice that experience and then sort of name it? Right? Like, ooh, buddy, you're having some really big feelings right now, right? Like it's really frustrating. Yeah. You know, I understand. I wish sometimes that I would get to keep playing whatever toy I was playing with. And it's really frustrating when sometimes you want to keep playing and you have to share. I get that, right? Like, so sometimes just naming the experience as you're bearing witness to it, which is very similar to what I might do in the therapy room, right? Like I might say, it sounds like this is what this feels like for you, right? And even being witnessed in that way, I feel like can somehow alchemically soften the space of resistance that we have a lot of times to the difficult feeling, if that makes sense.
I love that. So next time no one is crying over all his potato chips falling on the ground, I can be like, hey, dude, I know what you're feeling is probably frustration, maybe a little sadness, but next time you're at Trader Joe's, you could buy another bag.
I too have felt frustration over potato chips. Yes, that empathy that no one loves to talk about.
I do think it's fair to say that one would approach, a six-year-old boy and then me perhaps differently. But I do think what you're saying is very profound and needed. The naming of things is essential. But I wonder, like, for the folks listening who, like, are coming into their own selves, their, you know, late teens, early 20s, you know, I know, you know, when I was that age, I was screw up. And I mean, I'm not saying the listeners are screw ups, but like I didn't know what was going on in the world.
I was a mess.
Yeah. And I, you know, just the, you know, hearing you say, and I, you know, coming out of that, I'm 39 now. So I've developed some practice to do that work to figure out like, hey, what is this, you know? But sometimes it's hard to even figure out like, what is this feeling even, right? What is this? Like, how can I even name it when I don't even, it's so unfamiliar.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I do think though, like across the board, what I have found, whatever age we are, it is about the like getting into the space of like, how can I name what's coming up for me? And that becomes a practice, I think, right? I think that so often people will come into therapy and I'll say, you know, like, tell me about what you're feeling. And it's like deadpan, like no idea, right? Because that's not necessarily a language that we talk about commonly in our, you know, our lives. Like we don't necessarily name our feelings a lot. So it definitely becomes a practice to do it. But I think just, you know, giving ourselves the space to be still and notice, I think every age can do that, right? Like I have with my 3-year-old, with my adolescent clients, like across the board, like I get into the space with them of like, can I be still and notice? Can I like tune into my body? Can I do a little bit of a body scan and feel what's coming up for me? Where am I feeling whatever the tension is in my body, right? And absolutely, I think that time of, my teenage years, my feelings, looking back, I'm like, were my feelings big? I don't even know. I got so good at suppressing them and minimizing them so that I could fit in with what everybody else was feeling, right? And I think sometimes just normalizing that life stage, right? Like speaking to that, like it's really hard to sort of want to be yourself in what you're feeling when developmentally all you want to do is sort of fit in with your friends and not draw extra attention to yourself, right? So I think whatever it is, if we can sort of name it and normalize it and that all of the feelings are meant to be felt, because that's a little bit of the experience of being human. Like we are supposed to feel feelings. That's what we came here to do. So if we, you know, I think so often we want to sort of either pathologize ourselves or shame ourselves or, why do I have to feel this thing that I do? But can I just, instead of resisting it, allow for what it is? It just feels so different, you know?
So what would you say, like we talked about before, obviously we're doing this podcast during like a pandemic, depending on the person who is listening or is talking, like some people are still completely isolated. And yes. Some people are not, depending on the person. But what would you say to a young person right now who's feeling incredibly overwhelmed by feelings and maybe doesn't have the support like in their household or, you know, beyond?
Yeah. I would first say, you know, oof, this is such a difficult time. I think we really have to, you know, I was saying to a parent the other day about his teenage daughter. I was like, you know, gosh, these teenagers, these kiddos are sort of my heroes through all of this because so much of their world has been disrupted. And, you know, he sort of laughed at me and was like, oh, what's so hard? You know, like they get to sit around and watch Netflix all day and, you know, eat pizza, tough life. And I was like, I actually so strongly disagree. You know, at her age, when her social network is her entire existence, to have that stripped away, to have so much uncertainty that she's sitting in, bearing witness to the adults in her life sitting in so much uncertainty, it is just a very difficult thing for teenagers, right? And so first I would, if I were speaking to a teenager, I would want to honor how challenging this time is and really give both of us space to name that and just empathize with that. And, you know, how much I think, you know, just making it through this time up to this point, like, ugh, what a warrior you are for doing that. But also, like, how can I start to cultivate some support? Like, what is really cool to me is that there's like options for ways to connect with one another that we have virtually, right? Like, if you think, for instance, like Noan and I met one another, through Instagram, right? I think that is what is cool about, you know, like sometimes social media, sometimes these virtual platforms, you know, aren't always positive, but there are positive aspects to it, right? And there are ways to connect to people in these ways, right? So right now, for instance, I'm facilitating these groups in something called the Angry Therapist Lab, the TAT Lab, where it's just like we've created a community of like 300 people that like come together, and it's like basically like a yoga class where you can drop in any time of the day to whatever class sort of resonates with you, but it's like mental health based, right? So like one class might be on trauma, another class might be on codependency, another class might be on the chakras, right? So there's platforms that are offering that type of thing, but also there's like 12-step groups, and they have those for like children of alcoholics, or, you know, like different things that you can be struggling with. So if whatever's going on with you mentally, like a lot of times it can be a Google search to like, what are virtual ways that I can connect with other people that might be going through the same thing. That being said, I think some of this is a little bit about us doing that really difficult work of learning to sit with difficult feelings right now, right? And I think that when we learn to do it, becomes like, God, like a superpower. Like when I know that there is no feeling that is actually going to kill me, that is like a tool that I will have for life. And I think if I had learned that a little earlier in life, I think it could have just really... Well, you know, I almost said it could have spared me some suffering, but I'm so grateful for all of the journey at this point that I think it's all perfect. But I do think that once we learn that there is no feeling that will kill me, it becomes just such an incredible shift in the way we experience life.
Mm. I love that so much. I think it's so important to talk about that. And I like to look at it like you're like on a journey of sorts. You're like on this path, and the feelings are these things that you're curious about, right? You look at them, you see them, you ask them questions, you see, you kind of determine if this is a thing I'm holding or is it someone else's feeling, you know? And as you kind of get used to that process, you just get more comfortable in that journey. Mm. And you're 100% right. And knowing deep down that these things aren't bad or good, they're just things. They could be directives. They could be things we need to ignore, but we need to look, right? We need to look in order to determine that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of times, like I like to, you know, I love the way you just said that, Noam, because I think it reminds me of, I like to think of our feelings as sort of like this navigation system, right? Like if I can sort of follow the breadcrumbs of like what these feelings are trying to lead me to, maybe trying to get me to tune into, it just becomes like the path back to myself, really, and understanding myself and understanding what I need to know at this moment in time, right? So if we can make friends with feelings, if we can sort of say, sit down here, feeling with me, like, let's be in conversation. You are welcome here. Whatever you are, I don't need to shut you out. I don't need to sort of make you wrong. Please sit down and let's be in conversation with one another so I can understand what you've come to tell me.
Yeah. Feelings are our jam. We put them on toast.
Or crackers with goat cheese.
Or crackers with goat cheese. Yeah.
So right now, what do you think, when I tend to feel big things, I immediately go to like a coping mechanism, like eating too many crackers. But what are some better resources?
I'm going to go have some crackers after this conversation.
Well, I run a cracker company. No, I'm just kidding. But today's episode is, what are some better tools than coping by eating? or when you're feeling feelings, whether it's like a big feeling or just like sometimes you just feel like a little shift inside you and you feel like really angry or like really frustrated and you're like, why? Where'd that come from? Like, how do you deter back?
Yeah. Well, I always like to talk about the toolkit, right? And so I have like, you know, like a toolkit in my head that whenever a feeling is coming up that is really sort of difficult for me to stay in the wave, like I always talk about these experiences of challenging feelings like a wave that it comes, it moves through you. And when you're in it, like a wave, it might feel like you're going to drown in it. Like it can feel so big and overwhelming that sometimes it's frightening, right? But like all waves, inevitably it will pass if we can stay in it versus sort of resisting the flow of the wave, right? So that being said, when these feelings come up, I always like to sort of say, okay, like what tool do I need in this moment? Say for instance, I'm just feeling overwhelming anxiety, some existential anxiety in this moment in time, like what's going to happen? What is the rest of this year going to look like? You know, everybody's in deep conflict and division, and that's just starting to make me feel panicked. What would I do with that? So I'm going to dig into my toolkit as an example here. First of all, like tool number one, I get still. Let me back up. Before I get still, and this is because I'm a mama, so Jennifer, you can relate to this. I will ask for support if I need it, right? Exactly. So I will ask for help, right? Like I might ask, if I'm not alone, my kiddo's with me, I'll ask my kiddo's dad for some support or anyone that I can. Or sometimes in this moment in time, that looks like, you know what? You get to watch some Paw Patrol. Congratulations, because mama needs to go be still for a minute. But I think wherever you are, whoever you are, step one, get still and sort of like, can I dig into my toolkit and see what I need? And that might be to stay in stillness. I might need to meditate, just to be with my breath for like 10 minutes and sort of notice, you know, what feels different after that. I really love to dig into some of the people that I find grounding in their work, spiritual teachers, people who speak to higher truths that I need to remind myself of. So I might turn on a podcast of someone whose work I find really sort of grounding and inspiring. I might read some material from one of my favorite spiritual teachers. I this year have gotten really into astrology and tarot card reading. And so I might like pull a card that just sort of like helps me drop into a space of something that is bigger, a bigger awareness of like what all of this might be about. I will use some of my favorite tools for movement. So I might roll out my yoga mat and do a little bit of yoga, or I love some of the like somatic movement and dancing. And I will just sort of like check in with like what it feels like I need right now on a sensory level. Sometimes what makes me feel better is to get out into nature and just to like feel the air and breathe. Sometimes that looks like me just like stepping into a warm shower and really feeling the sensation of the water on my body can have like a deeply calming effect. But I actually, with clients, a lot of times will like to say like, let's actually write down your toolkit, right? Like the things that work as we try them, as they come up, let's put them in your toolkit. So next time you feel a feeling that feels like that, you know, I'm drowning in this feeling, I'm just like overwhelmed by it, you pull out your toolkit, you're ready. Like, okay, which one am I going to use first? Let's start to like run down the list of things in my toolkit to really stay with myself in the experience of what's coming up.
That's so great. I love that. I, you know, what helps me, and I wonder if you can relate to this, Danae and Jennifer, is because I think like for a while for me, you know, feeling my feelings was a thing I felt I didn't deserve, you know, and it was like this almost like selfish pursuit, which is such a twisted way to look at it. But I'd imagine some people out there can relate. So what helps me is I remind myself that feeling my feelings and being curious about them is loving myself, is honoring my truth, you know? And, you know, I would just give that to the listeners to remember, like if you're feeling, you know, really feeling your feelings is like selfish or whatever, like it's not, like you deserve it. You know, it's important stuff because it's honoring, it's truth, it's love.
I love that, Noan. And, you know, I think that there is just certainly, I think this is a little bit more of a Western concept, but, you know, across the board, I think we have just really been, again, conditioned to believe that there are certain feelings that we should be feeling, and then there are feelings that are the bad feelings. And I just so strongly disagree. I think we have to normalize that there will be fluctuations in the way that we feel. Sometimes we will feel more down or a little afraid and like we're not upbeat. Like that is actually like we are made of water and we are fluid, and it is natural for our feelings to continue to shift. But we from very young are sort of conditioned to believe happy should be the baseline. And if you're not happy, that means there's something wrong. You need to do something about it. But I would offer that sometimes our work is to just normalize the fact that, yeah, we are not always going to feel one way. That is actually not what it means to be in the experience of being alive.
Indeed. Yeah. I like to think of it as the human experience is kind of a reflection of the universe, which is, right, you know, a mystery. It's ups and downs. It's weird at times. It's, you know, so fulfilling at times. It's so uncomfortable at times. Like that is the human experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll just say to the listeners that, you know, sometimes, you know, as we pointed out, feeling your feelings is hard at times, but there are, as Danae pointed out very well, there are pockets of safety. I think safety is an important part of feeling our feelings, whether it's like in our own spaces or in our communities. And there are people like podcasts, like things that can make us feel a little safer, that can be helpful in these things. Like, so if you have communities, if you have the Tat Lab or podcasts, or even just, you know, your favorite, your favorite thinkers or whatever, your favorite books, like find those like anchors, you know, because those are the like safe pieces that are going to help you kind of tap into those feelings.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. I'm curious, when you guys were a teenager, or like a young 20, what was your anchor? Do you have like a healthy coping mechanism at all? No.
You know, that's funny. I feel like there was a period of time where I lost that, you know, and I think it's when I was in high school, actually, until like maybe like senior year, I rode horses. Noan and I were talking about horses the other day and how much like he like brings me back to that space and was sending me pictures of the house or the houses, the horses that he has. And, you know, I think about how much when I was younger, just intuitively, like I would go to the barn and I would like be out riding my horse in nature, and I would feel so much like just peace and awareness of something bigger than myself, right? And then I think when I went to college and I really sort of, you know, I sold my horse and was so sort of destabilized in the space of not being around anything I'd known my whole life, that was really when I stopped allowing myself feelings for a while, right? I think the fear was so big, and the loneliness and the isolation and the feeling different and all of the feelings that started to come up that felt overwhelming to me. And so I started figuring out ways to suppress feelings and shutting them down. And I would like party and drink and do other things instead of allowing myself to feel. And so I think, you know, for me, it was a process and a journey of coming back to that space that I had in my younger years, where I knew how to just like be with myself and by myself, feeling good in my skin and in my feelings. But, you know, I think that sometimes, and I always say this, I think when we're younger, we know how to do a lot of the things that we return to as we get older in life, right? Or we're learning to return to as we get older. But, you know, I think just normalizing that some of these things of the growing pains of being an adolescent and then a young adult are, you know, it's just a really, really difficult time. But can I sort of, like you said, Noan, like find sources of support that feel safe, friends where I can talk about what I'm really feeling, right? Like not the friends where I have to have like a facade, but like friendships, communities where I can like tell the truth. I love, there's this book called We Are the Luckiest by Laura McGowan. And she said, like, one of the most important things we can do in this life is find a house where the truth is told. And whatever that looks like for you, right? Like some space where people are telling the truth, that might be a therapist chair, that might be like a group of friends where you feel connected and safe to them, but some place where you can be honest with yourself and with other people about how you're really feeling is so important.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Danae, thank you very much for being a part of It's Okay to Feel. Can you please tell the listeners where they can connect with you?
Sure. So I'm on Instagram, at Danae Logan Selkin, and you can check out my podcast, which is Cheaper Than Therapy, or my website, which is DanaeSelkin.com. But just thanks so much for having me, you guys. This was really fun.
I loved getting to know you. This was wonderful.
Same, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for listening. If you loved the episode, we would love for you to subscribe and leave us a review. For more information or just to say hello, head over to Instagram at @Nami_OC, @NAMI_OC, or say hi to Known at @YouMeEmpathy, or me, Jennifer, @JenniferLynn, JenipherLynn. Thanks. Have a beautiful day.